It's got a death curse.
So it's bothering me like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Remember back in the day when a movie would come out and it was so popular that an entire fucking wall would be that movie? Nightmare on Elm Street 3 was one of the first movies I saw to have that kind of supply.
Shit, that's what keeps people alive.
I totally forgot that he was in it until I saw him.
Shit.
Have a nice stroll, asshole.
Where it's being ripped out of
the... Don't talk about the feet!
Where the tendons are being ripped through the tops of the feet.
Oh my god! It hurts every time I watch that scene.
If your only faith is science, Doctor, it may be you that's laid to rest.
I'm none with fucking smoke bomb powers.
Yeah,
I was just talking to you. Smoke bomb!
Gone.
It's a chair for you, kid!
I'm the wizard master.
Yeah, he was shocked.
For a moment, he was.
And I thought, yes, that was a moment of triumph for me. That was great.
I know who's trying to kill you.
Yeah. And she's there saying, listen, I've dealt with this guy before. He's bad news. He's real. You're in danger. And I'm here to help. I really enjoy that aspect.
You are the last of the Elm Street children.
And maybe tonight you'll be listening to another Horror 101 podcast. This is Cash Wampum welcoming you back to the show. We've got another threequel podcast for you. We're going to Dreamland this time. This will be our first show dedicated to that nightmare specter, Fred Krueger. If you're a listener who grew up in the 80s, I'm certain you remember just how popular Nightmare 3 was. This film brings back key players from the original. It had a very interesting cast. The success of Part 2 forced Wes Craven to get involved in the screenplay for Part 3, along with giving Frank Darabont his first writing credit. This was Chuck Russell's directorial debut. A lot of talented people cut their teeth on this project and delivered one of the most loved entries in the Freddy franchise. This film took a lot of risks and was a game changer that would redefine the spirit of the Elm Street films forever. And for these reasons, we are pleased to give the Horror 101 treatment to Dream Warriors. Straight talk only in this podcast, you understand?
Damn, I was going to say that.
So, Brian Stewart wanted to watch Part 2 this weekend, but he never got to it. But, I mean, you remember Part 2. You guys seemed awfully interested in doing Nightmare on Elm Street. I think you all were on the same page for this one.
I was actually voting for another one. I was voting for
Army of Darkness.
And I suggested Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
Then they got on the bad bandwagon for that.
Come on, Lisa. Kill her! Kill her!
What was the resolution to Part 2? How did they deal with Freddy? And
love. Love was the resolution of Part 2. Because she chases him. She goes to the boiler room.
Right.
Chases him down and seduces him.
He'll die with me. He'll die with both of us.
A lot of people didn't like Part 2 because it allowed Freddy out of the nightmare. It was more, we were talking about this earlier, Brian. Yeah. It was more of a possession film, you know?
Yeah.
Young man moves into Nancy's old house, finds her diary, and starts having dreams of this guy. And instead of trying to kill this kid, he's using him to get through to other people through his nightmares. And then at the end, he
just takes over this guy's body completely and manifests into the real world and causes havoc. And a lot of people had a big problem with that.
A lot of modern horror films have kind of taken that premise and run with it. We looked at The Conjuring, for instance. It's not really a haunting, it's a possession, they kept saying.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, starts out as a haunting, but only to wear down the human occupants, right? To wear them down to the point where they can be possessed. That was the M.O. So I remember, this was another case, just like Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3. I went, instead of Derek Cooks, and this time it was Jeff McClain, my buddy Jeff McClain. We were 11 going on 12, and Nightmare on Elm Street 3 came out 87, you said? Mm-hmm. Was playing at the Vanity. His mom took us to see it, so we're like, alright, we're going to go see Nightmare on Elm Street 3. All the posters that we got for movies, even rated R films, were all American, so the subtext of the rating would say, cannot be viewed by anyone under the age of 18 without an adult or guardian. So we're thinking, okay, well, there you go. We got an adult or guardian. And they're like, no, that's not the same in Canada. It was like, well, this is bullshit! This sucks, fuck Canada!
This is preposterous. I demand an explanation.
So yeah, we returned away at the door, and I had to wait for this to be come out in VHS. And I remember it coming out the following year, VHS. And this was one of those movies where there was like, remember back in the day when a movie would come out and it was so popular that an entire fucking wall would be that movie? There would be so many copies of this movie, it would take up an entire section of the wall. Nightmare on Elm Street 3 was one of the first movies I saw to have that kind of fandom, to have that kind of supply. I like how the beginning of this film, concerning the nightmare with Patricia Arquette, really conforms to the world of Freddy as we know it so far. Yeah. The dreamer wakes up in or around the house, descends all of a sudden into a boiler room-ish kind of setting. So they started this film with the same Freddy M.O.
Freddy's home.
That doll was ridiculous. Because she grabs the kid off of the bike.
She's running down the hallway to see the head and the leg.
That's a ridiculous doll. It wasn't even close. I mean, that doll's 4 pounds.
Again, HD does tend to screw over. Like, even the wheelchair scene is what you see the rope tied, like the cat got, like the wire tied to the bottom when they were pulling it.
Well, you know what? Even in the VHS days, that doll looked fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Put me down, you're hurting me.
Part of the zaniness, the wild aspect, starts at the beginning with the whole bathroom assault. When she comes out of a dream, you think she's safe, and then the water faucet,
the taps,
starts assaulting her.
I like how the actual pipes look like human bones. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah, and they're squeaking as they come up.
Copper bones.
It looks like bones. Yeah, he's right.
Yeah.
You can see the two bones.
But it follows a dream logic, though. Dreams have a way of taking shape and changing on you, right? And just like the rapid change of locations, you know, from the house to the boiler room and back and forth. It all makes sense in a dream sense.
And in local news. Deaths have occurred, both suicides. County health officials are at a loss to explain this alarming trend.
Say, listen, Doc, I got a new theory about all these suicides, right?
Don't hold back on us, Max. We need all the help we can get.
Yeah, well, fucked up chromosomes, man. Think about it. All their parents dropped acid during the 60s.
Lawrence fucking Fishburne.
Fish!
Back when he was credited as Larry Fishburne.
Larry.
Yeah.
You know, as the orderly.
Well, it beats Sims' theory. She thinks it's nothing but sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Shit. That's what keeps people alive.
I totally forgot that he was in it until I saw him.
Shit.
After Kristen is maimed during her encounter with Freddy, her injuries look like a suicide attempt. So now she's been committed to the Weston Hills Psychiatric Hospital.
Suicide attempt. They just brought her down from County General.
What's her name?
Kristen Parker. She was fine until we tried to sedate her.
That was a great scream. I love.
She does
scream.
Have a good scream.
Oh, it's, my God.
It's believable.
There isn't shrill. A lot of people that can scream like that.
It's shrill. I can't stand too much shrill.
But when she's fighting for her life, yeah. when she doesn't want to be put under and the orderlies are trying to sedate her, she is fighting for her life, and you honestly
it's
buy
a
that she's doing
that. It's of genuine terror.
Yeah, I loved her scream.
Five, six, grab your crucifix. Seven, eight, better stay up late. Nine, ten. Never sleep again. Where did you learn that rhyme?
Kristen's wigging out. They want to sedate her. She just cut Lawrence Fishburne with a scalpel, so obviously she's not in the good favor of this new institution that she's visiting, but here comes Nancy to kind of save the day. Finishing her rhyme and connecting with her immediately.
Oh, by the way, that was really great work with a new patient. Pretty smooth for an intern.
I have had some experience with pattern nightmares.
There's an understatement.
I mean, to bring Nancy back as a survivor of the first one, because at the end of the first film, she thinks that her mom's okay, she thinks that her friends are okay, that she has triumphed, but in the end, no, she hasn't triumphed, she's still in the nightmare, and she's lost. This movie suggests that maybe she had some sort of a victory to some degree where she lost her mother, she did lose her friends, all that's correct, but she's still around.
Yeah.
And she's aware. And she's helping youths with dream problems.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Coming across a case where these kids are reporting that there's something in their dreams, someone in their dreams that's attacking them, and she gets involved.
Straight talk only in this room.
Today I'd like to start getting us acquainted with our new staff member, Nancy Thompson. Let's make her all welcome.
Hi.
We're introduced to a group of youths who all seem to have the same problem. They're dreaming of a maniac who's trying to kill them. Along with Kristen, there's Philip the sleepwalker, Taryn the ex-junkie, Joey the mute, Jennifer the aspiring actress, Kincaid the resident badass, and Will the cripple.
Can I interject something here just to save us all some time?
Sure, Philip, go ahead.
Well, according to our kind hosts, our dreams are a group psychosis, sort of a mellow mass hysteria. The fact that we all dreamt about this guy before we ever met doesn't seem to impress anybody.
Yeah. That's right.
So we go in circles, making minimal progress with maximum effort.
In their first group, he mentions, he's like, you know what, the fact that all of us have dreamt about this guy even before we even met each other doesn't seem to impress anybody. Nobody finds that odd that we're all dreaming about the same guy and we're all having the same problem and here we are in group dealing with it together. Nobody finds that interesting at all.
That's like that all of the surviving children from the initial families all up in a psychiatric ward
and
for years of torment. Where else would you find them if they weren't dead already?
Oh, the snake.
The snake.
Oh, the snake. Snake.
Now,
that
you know what?
That was a close second for me.
The snake, that was a great practical effect.
It was.
Yep, and Nancy falling into the dream, I thought was a cool shot.
Through the
chair.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was some really nice touches.
And then her stabbing this Freddy worm with a piece of the mirror and it recoiling and looking at her going, you.
For the first time.
It recognizes her. I fucking know who you are, bitch.
Oh my God.
It's like, oh my God, get us the fuck out now.
I used to live in this house. That's just a house I dream about. Have you ever done that before? Pull someone into your dream?
For lack of a better word, secret powers that everybody had, the kids. They had all these special gifts. I think that was probably one of my most favorite things.
It's an amazing gift. Man of my dreams. He's real, isn't he? He's real.
As soon as Nancy shows up, things escalate. Yeah. So, I believe you. Okay.
Dead.
And the first one to go is Philip the Sleepwalker.
Fella, wake up. Have a nice stroll, asshole.
The one effect that has aged incredibly well is the first death. That is a beautiful.
The
tendons,
are
just stretched and like starting to break apart. But you can see the grip, and especially in the feet, where it's being ripped out.
Talk about the feet.
Where the tendons are being ripped through the tops of the feet.
Oh my god! It hurts every time I watch that scene. Watching the feet come into the frame, that big gaping hole on the top of the foot. That's your instep, right? That's like if you get stepped on there, it fucking hurts. No, now we've got a gaping hole with these veins coming out. The guy's being led around like a marionette with his own fucking veins.
And even then, the one part I kind of was like, what? Was like, see him walking past the security station or like the nurse's station, and then someone magically
goes through the door.
I'm like, what?
The one thing
was just like, okay.
You know what? The one thing I wish I had seen was when they show the exterior shot with Freddy kind of holding him up by his hand there with the marionette strings. I wanted to see him kind of hover him out off the ledge a bit, just float there for a second, and a real shot of him just floating there, and people like, what the hell, and then just dropping him. That would have been so much cooler than just watching him walk off the ledge.
Well, I think he kind of teetered him off just a bit. He was off, his center of gravity was over the ledge, and then he cut the fucking line.
It would have been so cool if we could have seen him floating in midair just for a moment. Just so that you'd have that little kind of what the fuck supernatural moment. That would have been great.
But I think the other kids knew exactly what was going on, so they didn't really need that extra.
And it
wasn't
like it would have been if there was somebody aside from them looking at it in the moment of what the fuck.
Exactly.
But because it was just them, there was no need to.
Yeah. It may have been the one thing that cemented the doctor's belief in their story.
But the doctor didn't see it. No. The doctor saw it.
How much longer are you going to go on blaming your dreams for your own weakness?
Later, how much longer are you going to keep blowing smoke up our ass?
That's enough, Kincaid!
There will be no repeat occurrences of last night's events. From now on, your doors will be locked during sleeping hours. We'll start a policy of evening sedation for everybody.
The fuck you will! Anybody tries drugs on me, get his ass kicked!
You've just bought yourself a night in the quiet room, mister. Now sit down.
Fuck you. You sit down.
Easy, Kincaid.
Nobody gonna put me to sleep. Man, get away from me, man. Let me alone, man. I don't want to go to sleep. Ain't nobody gonna put me to sleep. I don't want to go to sleep. Man, ain't nobody gonna put me to sleep. Get your ass. I ain't going to sleep. Man,
everybody stay in your seats.
So one other aspect I really liked about this movie that is in some of our favorite films, it's a staple of great horror, I think, is the role of the skeptic. In all great horror, there's always the one person who's the naysayer, who doesn't believe, and as a result, puts everyone else in danger.
Sims!
You've got Jaws, the mayor in Jaws.
Yep.
You've got the people who wanted to hold the town festival in the fog. Fright Night, I mean, how many people are going to go on dying because his friends won't believe him? But there's always the role of the skeptic, and in this, it's the head nurse.
Yeah.
And the fact that she doesn't want to believe this story, even though she thinks she's doing what's best for them, she's putting them all in jeopardy. And
throwing everybody under the bus. You know, you did this to yourself. Well, you technically dialed the fucking phone.
Well, let's just correct this. She's not a head nurse. She's a doctor.
She is a doctor.
Okay.
So. Yeah. I'm a doctor.
Just because she's a woman, she's not a nurse.
Yeah, but still.
Sexist! She's,
but she is the one putting everyone in harm's way, though. And I like that aspect. I like the fact that there's always seems to be an authority figure in horror films who has the ability to ignore the true believers and to proceed, to push ahead, even though we know it's unwise.
But when a young actress says, how do you succeed in this business, you don't always say you have to study.
I think you should study. Study, work, and then maybe you can make it.
Can I ask you something?
Certainly.
Who gives a fuck what you think?
I remember that taking me off guard because, like, can I ask you something? Certainly. Who gives a fuck what you think? And all of a sudden it's him.
Yeah.
And then he's off his chair about to strike her with the claw.
Yeah,
and then it goes to snow.
It hits you with the language first because you think you're watching a typical late night talk show type show. And to hear that language on the television is at first striking. And then her, the visual attack, and then it goes to, what is it, the static on the television.
Yeah.
And you can still hear her screaming.
Yeah. But Jennifer's reaction, it was the same as my reaction. What the fuck did I just see what? There? Am I dreaming?
I mean, if Zsa Zsa Gabor doesn't stand a chance, what hope do we have?
This is it, Jennifer. Your big break in TV. Fuck the prime time, bitch.
Within 40 minutes, you're going from being introduced to another Nightmare on Elm Street film where you're in the boiler room and Freddy's in the shadows, as we're accustomed to him coming out of a fucking television set with the fucking rabbit ears on his head, going, welcome to prime time, bitch, as he
pulls her into the TV.
Throws her into a television set. It's like, okay.
And here's the issue, too, that I had with that scene with Jennifer's death. The doctors didn't even think it was unusual that the height of that television set and how her head got through there.
She did a run and jump.
Yeah,
that's
say,
what I'm
yeah.
saying. Like, there's no way.
Like, who commits suicide by running
way.
And jumping headfirst
exactly.
into a television that's up 8
yeah.
feet on the wall?
At least eight feet.
Okay, listen up, you guys. Nancy has something to say.
Yeah, well, I have to say, and it doesn't seem very significant, but after Nancy tells the doctor, listen, are you ready for the truth? Because as soon as she comes into the frame as a Nightmare on Elm Street fan, we know that she's been through this. She's battled Freddy before. She knows what this guy's about. She recognizes that these other patients are dealing with this guy right now and that they're in danger. So after she tells him, listen, are you ready for the truth? And then it goes to their group. And when she lays it on him,
I know who's trying to kill you.
Don't humor us. We're not in the mood.
And they're like, fuck off, you don't know shit.
Bitch, yeah.
And she's like, you know what? He wears a dirty fucking brown hat. He's horribly burned and he's got knives on his hands. And everybody's like, oh shit. And now they're listening.
Who is he? His name is Freddy Krueger. He was a child murderer before he died. And after he died, he became something worse. 6 years ago, he killed my friends. He almost killed me.
We know from the first film that, at the very least, Nancy's mother was complicit in his murder. We know that much. We don't know about Glenn or Tina or Rod, for that matter. We know that they're all being targeted, but at the very least, we know that Nancy's mother was complicit in his murder. Fast forward to this film. Now we get a little bit more of the story. Nancy's saying, listen, my parents, your parents, all had a hand in killing this fucking clown.
Yeah.
And we're paying for their sins.
Yeah.
And she's there saying, listen, I've dealt with this guy before. He's bad news. He's real. You're in danger. And I'm here to help. I really enjoy that aspect.
You are the last of the Elm Street children.
This wing's been closed for years. What was this place?
Purgatory. Fashioned by the hands of men. Twisted, lonely souls. The worst of the criminally insane were locked up in here like animals.
This whole facility was shut down in the 40s, wasn't it? Some sort of scandal?
The young girl on the staff was accidentally locked in here over the holidays. The inmates kept her hidden for days. She was raped hundreds of times. When they found her, she was barely alive. And with child.
That girl was Amanda Krueger. Her child,
Freddy.
The bastard son of 100 maniacs.
To find out that this man was the product of a horrible crime, conceived by evil and torture.
Some of the most, you know, indelible lines are, I just realized, are from this movie, which you relate to the whole of the franchise. The product of, what is it, 1,000 maniacs? Or
son of 100 maniacs, or son of 1,000 maniacs. At some point it went son of 1,000 maniacs, right? Yeah.
You said something before about laying him to rest.
You must find the remains and bury him in hallowed ground. If your only faith is science, Doctor, it may be you that's laid to rest.
Wait! Sister!
If you watch this for the first time, you don't recognize that this is the ghost of his mother. She's just some old nun telling a tale. Yeah. At the end of the film, you recognize the importance of
a nun with fucking smoke bomb powers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just talking to you. Smoke bomb!
Gone. Yeah.
Ironically, also used by Krueger.
I haven't got to say this in a long time, but I get to say it now. The telling of the tale. It's so compelling, and it's just that story that she tells is so gripping. That when he tries to leave the room and the door starts to slightly close, we get a moment, a rush of panic for a second. Like, get the fuck out of that room. And especially when he stops at the door and looks back and sees the room again, but not as some, you know, storage room, but as the room where that terrible thing happened, it scares the hell out of him to look at the room again. And I thought, wow, what a great moment.
Whoever she is, she does seem to know more about Krueger than I do.
The question is, what happened to his body?
Only one man knows. And it's time for him to talk.
Another thing, I appreciate that John Saxon, who was like, John Saxon was a big name. He was one of the top bills for Nightmare on Elm Street.
He was in Enter the Dragon, man.
I appreciate that he came back
Swamp
to
Thing.
I appreciate that he came back to reprise his role as Nancy's father in this film. And I also appreciate the fact that after the events, because in the first film, he was lieutenant.
Yeah.
He was in charge of the police department. In this film, he's busted his way down to fucking security guard. So whatever happened in the first movie really affected him.
Yeah.
You know, he turned to booze and he lost it. He became estranged from his daughter, but still around. And was integral in getting rid of this fucking guy.
Go of him, you bastard. Oh my god.
I liked that whole scene because up until this point, it's pretty much Freddy either torments you, or he kind of sets the stage, or he kills you. I think this is the first time we've seen him take a hostage.
Yes.
So the fact that, afterwards, you're expecting him to be dead once they get out of the dream and rush in there, and then suddenly you see him with the tube down his throat, and you realize he's in a coma. And then when Nancy goes and says, oh, you fucking... And then suddenly the message gets... I realize the sound effect was a fucking zipper or something adjacent to it, you know. But I liked that scene because he's basically taunting them, saying, come and get him, bitch. I like that because it was the first time we've seen Freddy... Because I think he legitimately realized that instead of picking them off one by one,
he can have
they presented him with an opportunity just to get them all in one shot.
As Dr. Gordon retrieves Freddy's remains to finally lay him to rest, Nancy uses Kristen's dream power to pull all of the remaining Elm Street kids into the nightmare and try and save Joey, who's been in a coma, trapped in his dream ever since Freddy pulled an enormous cock block on him. If you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about.
Nancy... I knew you'd come.
I don't think we'd let you go in alone, do you?
No way. We're a team.
Yeah.
Listen, everybody. Joey needs us. I can feel him. Where is he?
How do we find him, Kristen?
There's so many nods to the first one with the feathers from the pillow material flying. Reminiscent of what that one scene when Nancy was in the bed and he cut it and she's screaming and all the feathers from her pillow flying. So it happened in the pillow in Kirsten's room as well as in the quiet room.
you can see the glove coming through and slicing through the padded room.
Yep.
And as it's making its way through, all this pieces of padded padding and feathers are just obscuring everything until everybody is isolated, right? That's what he was doing. He was isolating everyone.
I said, where's the fucking bourbon?
You should listen to your mother.
God damn it, Kristen, you ruin everything. Every time I bring a man home, you spoil it. You know what your shrink says? You're just trying to get a little attention.
Well, Kristen's not having very good luck so far, so let's go see how Taryn the ex-junkie's doing.
Welcome home, Taryn. Look familiar.
Okay, asshole. Let's dance.
Does anyone think that going up against Freddy with a switchblade is going to be...
That's what he said. It's like, go for something with some fucking reach.
Couldn't dream up a fucking sword.
But she got... machete. She got an armpit shot on him. She got an armpit shot on him. That was enough to slow him down just for a moment. That'd slow me the fuck down. Switchblade in the armpit?
Let's get high.
I will admit, though, one of my favorite effects, the one I remember, one of the things I remember the most... since I watched it when I was younger, was that...
Oh, the
track marks.
I'm like, no. Don't look at your arms. Don't look at your arms.
Oh, what a rush.
Well. You look tired. Have a seat.
No, thanks. I'm fine just the way I am.
For now, maybe. But when you wake up, it's back in the saddle again.
When he pulls up the wheelchair for me, when I was a young kid, there was a sleepover hit, that movie. It was one of the ones we used to watch for TV.
It's a chair for you, kid!
I am the Wizard Master. I am the Wizard Master.
And that look on Freddy's face of like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, he was shocked.
For a moment, he was.
And I thought, yes, that was a moment of triumph for me. That was great.
In the name of Lorik, Prince of Elves, demon be gone!
Why do you charge it? Okay, for anyone who's ever played D&D, mages... and wizards and sorcerers are ranged characters. They don't charge into battle, and they're no good at melee ranges.
Well, like,
he's incurring an attack of opportunity.
Like you said, it's one of those movies that's out of time, because if that kid was playing World of Warcraft, it would have saved his fucking life. You stay at range. You no mage tank.
No.
Sorry, kid. I don't believe in fairy tales.
Looks like Nancy and the gang have finally found Joey. He's still hanging in there.
Let him go, Kruger!
Your wish is my command.
No! Joey!
In the first two films, the guy was in the shadows. He was scary as hell. He had no comedy to him at all. As of part three, he was the jokester. He was the practical joker. He was the one-liner. He was put into the light. And part three made Freddy... who he was. If it wasn't for part three, he would not have had such a long career. And I think a lot of people recognize that, and they revere part three because it started him off on that zany roller coaster ride of entertainment. He was no longer just a scary dude in somebody's nightmares. Now, he was a sensation.
He's strong. He's never been this strong.
Yes, sir. The souls of the children. Give me strength.
And this was the first film that told us that Freddy was collecting the souls of his victims. Another piece of exposition. Okay, everyone I kill becomes part of this collective of souls that gives me more power.
Always room for more.
Bury the fucking thing!
Ah. let's get the negatives out of the way. The whole Jason and the Argonauts skeleton scene.
I liked it. I don't care. Lady Harryhausen forever.
The stop motion. I mean, that shit was turning heads in the late 50s, early 60s. This picture was 1987.
There was no CGI in 87. Not worthy. But they could have done
an actual maquette or a mock up. You know, there was other shit they could have.
Whose idea was it? Well, obviously it was Bob Shea, but we want to use this 30-year-old special effect for this skeleton.
Maybe they thought that they could nail it and nobody'd be able to.
Well, at least the skeleton had real texture to it.
They filmed something tangible, but yeah, it was stop motion that was put matte over the live action.
I will admit the keying for this wasn't that bad. It was the effect that gave it away more than anything else.
Die.
The fact that she did die, she's kind of a martyr. Even though she was duped. She was duped.
Yeah.
That kind of, I don't really sit well with that, but she was duped.
But she did save her when she tackled Freddy and stabbed Freddy with his own glove.
And I remember a lot of friends when we were kids saying, okay, it's because she got him with his own weapon, that's why he lost power and he was able to get destroyed. I didn't buy that because he was taking his own weapon and slicing himself in the first movie.
Yeah.
I didn't buy that. No, I bought the whole Christian ceremony,
sanctification.
Thank you. Sanctification and all the holy water and crucifix. I bought all that shit and watching him just disappear into a blazing white light.
Yeah.
If they would have ended it right there, I would have been satisfied. He killed his arch nemesis, but he was destroyed in the end.
I won't let you die. I won't let you. I'm gonna dream you into a beautiful dream. Forever and ever.
But when she's holding her body, crying over her, saying, I'm not going to let you die, I'm going to dream you a happy, beautiful dream. Yeah. That was touching. That was really touching for me. That she, in a small amount of time, fell in love with this girl, not just because of who she was, but because she put everything on the line to help save her and her friends, and she died because of it. It was really touching. Let's score it. Nude, you get to start.
7.5.
7.5.
Yep. I enjoyed this movie. Like I said, the little nods. I like the whole Freddy character throughout the movie. I agree with you what you said earlier about the corniness came later. I'm glad it didn't. They didn't portray him to be as corny. I like the history lesson they gave us about his mom. And everything that was going on. I just enjoyed the whole movie. It was a good, solid watch.
What has she talked you into?
Nothing. They're my patients. It's my decision. I want these dreams stopped.
You know what? At my end of this movie, not perfect, but it's far less goofy than I thought than I remember it. And I think I had the same reaction you did, that it's surprisingly more serious than I remember. That I must be getting a lot of it mixed up with 4. Because he was definitely jokier in 4.
Yes.
It was very silly.
It goes downhill pretty fucking slalom after this.
But for me, because it was pleasantly surprising but not perfect, I was going to give it an 8. That I would watch this again. I really did enjoy this.
Oh.
Yeah.
Listen, I really think you mean well. I do, but my kid's been dying off, and even if I didn't have orders from Sims, I wouldn't let you near her, no way.
Really?
I give her a 7. Honestly, there are a lot of things that I do like about it. But like I said, this movie leans itself more towards a mashup. Like, there's just parts of it that are only really great in my head because I've added to it. Like I said, I enjoy it, obviously, because I gave it a 7. But there's just a lot of little things that just kind of bugged me when we were watching it. And then when we were talking about it, it just kept getting whittled down fractions of a point until we got to 7. If I don't know if it was in the hands of a different director, or just, you know, if it was edited a little bit better, it would go higher.
Who in the fuck would you think?
I'll give it an 8. I'll give it an 8. I think the film itself, I think the film itself deserves a 7.5, but I'm going to give it an 8 because I because there is an importance to this film. Dream Warriors made Freddy the household name. It turned him into a rock star. This was the beginning of the rock star Freddy age. And because of this film, he was able to survive 4 or 5 more films. As a horror fan, more is more.
But they ain't all diamonds.
No. And if you watch, 4 is silly, but it's definitely entertaining because it's a Rennie Harlan film. Yeah. In my opinion, the 5th one was the weakest.
See, the ending to this one seemed like, so far, the best solution I've seen for a Freddy movie.
And
it's grounded in horror film logic and lore, and it makes sense to us.
And right? I would agree with you, and that's why I would say if Nightmare on Elm Street 3 was the end of Fred Krueger, if there was never 4 and beyond, as a horror fan, I would have been happy with that arc.
Yeah. I agree.
Folks, that's the end of the Nightmare on Elm Street 3 show. Obviously, we had differences of opinion on the quality of the movie, but all in all, the crew here agree. The Dream Warriors was a very important film in the franchise. With Chuck Russell helming a script involving the writing of Frank Darabont, it's no wonder Part 3 has become a fan favorite for decades. We hope you've enjoyed this trip back to 1987. We had a fun time rewatching this and recording the show. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Give us a holler on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. Keep your eyes open for hints for our next threequel coming at you next month. For the world-famous Brian Stewart, the cult sensation Nick McPherson, and my lovely wife, Nude, this is Cash Wampum saying thanks for listening and reminding you that there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you. We're going to help you find it right here at Horror 101, educating your fears.
Who are those guys?